At the age of 63, Yaakov ran away from Esav. He left his parents' house because Esav was going to kill him. Vayider Yaakov neder lemor. At that point, Yaakov made a neder. He appealed to Hashem, he petitioned Hashem, and he asked Hashem for help in a number of areas. Im Yelokim Yimodi, if Hashem will be with me, Ushmarani Bederach Hazeh, if Hashem will take care of me, if Hashem will give me Begel Lechel, Lechem Lechel, Begel Lubosh, Vishafti B'Shalom Beis Avi, and if Hashem will return me in peace to my father's house, then I will make this Evan a Matzeva, and I will give Meiser. Basically, Yaakov Avinu, recognizing that he was in dire straits, petitioned Hashem for help in many areas, help in physical areas, help in spiritual areas, and there were four actual requests that Yaakov made. One of the requests was, V'shafti b'shalom beis avi, if Hashem will return me peacefully to my father's house. Says Rashi on the Pasuk, what does b'shalom mean? Shalim menachet. If Hashem will return me complete from sin, Shlo elmad midarki lovan, that I won't learn from the ways of Lovan. Basically, Yaakov was afraid. He was now going to the house of Lovan, and he ended up staying there quite a long time. He was afraid that he would learn from Lovan, so he asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu of a special siyata shmaya, Hashem, give me special protection that I shouldn't learn from the ways of Lovan. And that's how Rashi explains his pasuk. And this Rashi is quite difficult to understand, because let's keep in mind the fact that Yaakov Avinu was a tzaddik of unimaginable proportions. He was the greatest of the Avos, and although he wasn't yet at his full prime, he was 63 years of age. Yoshev Olim. What he did until then was learn from Yitzchak, his father, learn from Avram, his grandfather. He was totally immersed in learning Torah. From that point forward, he then went to Yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver and spent another 14 years in total immersion. But when I say total immersion, Rashi makes a point that when he's leaving the Yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver, he lied down to sleep, because the entire 14 years that he was there, he didn't sleep in a bed. The concept of a full night's rest in a bed, as most people do, was not within Yaakov Avinu's schedule. He was too involved in learning, too immersed. Maybe he caught a small amount of sleep here, a small amount of sleep there, but the concept of a regular night's sleep wasn't part of his schedule. So how is it possible that he's afraid that Lavan is going to influence him? The man is a tzaddik of unimaginable proportions. When he gets to the house of Lavan, he's 77 years of age. He's the greatest of the Avos. And more than that, why would Yaakov be afraid that of all people, Lavan would influence him? Yaakov is known as the Ish Emes, a man of truth. Lavan was a Rami. Lavan was a devious, deceitful trickster. The nature of Yaakov is to be pure and honest. The nature of Lavan is the opposite. Yaakov doesn't have a bent towards this type of activity. He doesn't have a predisposition towards being dishonest, quite the opposite. He would see a Lavan as despicable, the antithesis of everything I recognize as great. What are the odds of him being influenced by it? But even more, keep in mind the fact that if anything, Yaakov was going to be burnt by Lavan. You see, Lavan's deviousness was used directly against Yaakov. That deceit was used to trick Yaakov and make him work way, way more than he should have. So even if Yaakov had some predisposition, when that is used against him, surely it would cause him to be and to look at it with disdain, to hate it. So why was Yaakov afraid that he was going to learn from the ways of Lavan, to the extent that he begs Hashem, Hashem, please protect me from this? Meaning he knows that he's walking into an Nisayon. He knows that for some reason he's afraid that he might learn from Lavan. Surely if he's on guard, and it's not something he naturally is pulled to, and it's something that he's prepared for, you'd imagine he doesn't need special siyata d'shmaya, doesn't have to beg Hashem, Hashem, you should guard me. And the question is, why was Yaakov really afraid of that? And I believe the answer to this question is predicated on the fact that the Avos and Chazal had a fundamental understanding of human nature. And while we consider ourselves students of human nature, the truth is quite the opposite. And as a classic example, Gemara Chagiga says, Gezel v'arayas, thievery and illicit relations, nafshu shel adam machmadasun umesavelehem. The nefesh of a person desires them and finds them beautiful. Now, if you'd ask the average person, do you enjoy gezel, stealing? Is that something that's beautiful to you? Is that something you desire? I don't steal. And if somehow I made a mistake in business, a calculation, something, one thing, but you tell me that I desire to steal and I consider it beautiful, and Arias, I desire that, please. And if you'd ask the average person, they would tell you it's foreign from their nature. And yet what Chazal are revealing to us is quite the opposite. The nature of man is very, very much towards this. And again, it doesn't mean the neshama, it doesn't mean the nefesh ha-sichli, but there is a part of me that doesn't regard anyone else's property as anything but available. My nefesh ha-bahami recognizes things that look appealing, things that look nice, and it wants it, it desires it. And it doesn't recognize boundaries, and it doesn't recognize ownership, and it doesn't recognize that I'm taking it from you. It's something that I like, something I want, something I'm going to have. And Chazal had a very, very insightful understanding into human nature. And for that reason, they put up various gedorim. Yichud is a very wise system of laws. A man and a woman are not allowed in privacy together in a way that could lead to trouble. Why? Because Chazal understood the nature of a human. They understood the way things occur. And because of that wise understanding, they took precautions, they guarded themselves, and everyone else is so sophisticated, so beyond, are fooling themselves, and they only find it out when a rude awakening happens and something that they never could have anticipated suddenly befalls them. If you'd like to understand the answer to Yaakov Avinu understood that he was a human. And we human beings tend to ape those around us. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta defined the human in such a way. He says, we humans ape behaviors of other people. It's just natural. When the people around us act in a particular way, we tend to act in that way. We are social creatures. We tend to create social groups. And that which the people around us do, we tend to accept as normal, as proper. We adopt those ways, and it influences us. And Yaakov Avinu's perception was so keen and so fine that he recognized that he was a human. And because he recognized that, he was afraid. Now, I don't think Yaakov Avinu was afraid he's going to rob banks because he lived in Lavan's house for a while. But he definitely was afraid that on some level, Lavan's deceit, his trickery would influence him. On some level, Yaakov's purity would have been marred. And to some extent, it would have affected him. And because of that, he wasn't secure. And he did whatever he could to guard himself against it. Obviously, he prepared for the battle, being in Lavan's house and not being influenced. But he recognized that the only way he could really be secure is by asking Hashem for help. And he asked Hashem for special siyat reshmaya. And I believe there's a lot for us to learn from this Rashi. Number one, the effect of the environment. Just understanding that I can consider what people do around me as abhorrent, as disgusting, as abominable, but that doesn't mean it won't influence me. And if you stick around long enough, the putrid smell sort of wears off. If you live in a garbage dump, after a couple of weeks, after a couple of months, you no longer smell the smell. You no longer notice it even. After a while, it becomes normal. And we have to recognize, number one, that the environment we live in will affect us. Even if we look at the way the outside world treats women and desire as absolutely deviant, as abhorrent, it gets in, it affects us, and it changes us on some level. And we have to be cognizant, we have to be aware that it doesn't affect us, and we have to be aware so that we resist it. Number two, a person can have tremendous ideals. Yaakov Avinu learned for 63 years, and then 14 years after that, he reached a level of purity and holiness. And his ideals were probably crystal clear, near perfect. Yet the clarity that I have now may change. If I go to a different locale, go to a different situation, hang around people, the clarity of machshava, the clarity of thought that I have can change. And in a little while, it starts becoming less clear, and I become a different person. But the real point to learn from this particular Rashi, I believe, is that you have to be wise. Meaning you have to not just go about things in a, I can fight, don't worry about me. You have to be very, very wise, and very careful, and very guarded, and extremely strategic. Yaakov Avinu was a Gibor Chayil. Yaakov Avinu's willpower could probably destroy most human beings you could ever imagine. And Yaakov Avinu was very, very motivated. And I dare say that Yaakov Avinu's emotionality was quite complete, and he didn't have depressions and anger and everything else. So if anyone didn't have to be afraid, surely it was Yaakov Avinu. But the point is, he was wise to himself, wise to his circumstances, wise to human nature, and because of that, he planned strategically. And that's the point that I really would like to focus on now. We mentioned before that if you want to deal with this issue of taiva, of desire, you can't focus on it alone. Now, earlier we mentioned the reason why you can't is because I am a complex human being. There's a nefesh habahami and a nefesh hasichli. There's an animal instinct and a pure neshama. There's imagination. There's a satan. There are many, many different components. And the big problem is that I am an ever-changing person. Either I strengthen a nefesh hasichli or I strengthen a nefesh habahami. Every time I do a mitzvah, every time I learn, every time I give tzedakah, every time I daven and speak to Hashem as if I'm speaking to Hashem, my nefesh hasichli becomes stronger. The neshama comes more to the fore. Surely, limud haTorah, learning, is the most pure nutrient for the soul. It gives my neshama strength. It gives it energy, and it changes the balance of nefesh habahami and nefesh hasichli. The seichel becomes stronger. It becomes more dominant, and I feel differently. On the flip side, every time I give in to the nefesh habahami, it becomes stronger. The desires become stronger. But the I am made of two overlapping circles, one white and one black. And if the nefesh habahami is black and the nefesh hasichli is white, depending on which gradient level each is on will determine the final color. If the white is stark, strong white, and the black is a very, very light gray, when you put the two together, it's just a very light gray that you're left with. But on the other hand, if the black is pretty strong and the white is kind of washed out, you end up with a very dark color. So the I, whom sitting right in between all of this, am greatly influenced by the balance, by the change, and therefore I can't just work on taiva alone, because there's a whole balance called I, and if I don't change that balance, if I'm not growing in my overall ruchnias, what's going to happen is I just won't care anymore. I mean, it won't bother me. Okay, so go to Ganim. Okay, so you won't gain olamab. Okay, so what? So you won't grow, you won't come. So what? You see, once the nefesh habahami becomes dominant, it only sees that which is immediate and revealed. And immediately in front of me, there's no danger of doing X, Y, or Z. Immediately in front of me, there's no danger to drinking bleach or putting my hand in fire, because the behemoth doesn't see it that way. And if I allow the behemoth side of me to become more dominant and strong, I won't care anymore. The fight won't be worth fighting. I just don't, it doesn't bother me. So what? Who cares? Are you going to damage your neshama? Well, for eternity, you're going to, what do you mean eternity? I'm alive this moment. I desire what I want right now, and that's all I see. And if the nefesh habahami becomes stronger and stronger, I, as a totality, care less and less. And that's one reason why a person must work on the ruchnia's balance, constantly growing, constantly learning more, dominating more, giving more tzedakah, and working on his midos, because the more he does that, the more he'll care, the more he'll recognize the damage, and the more motivated he'll be to fight. But there's another reason also why you can't just work on taiva alone, why you have to be a balanced person. I'll explain to you why. Boxers, especially young fighters who are training, whether it be for the Olympics or amateur fighters training for fights, have a rule. Generally, they have to be in bed by 9 p.m. Now, you may wonder why an 18-year-old has to be in bed every night by 9 p.m. And the answer is quite simple. If you're demanding of your body extreme output and you're training yourself for peak physicality, your body needs sleep. And your body needs more than 8 hours sleep, often 10 hours sleep or more a night. And athletes will put in a tremendous amount of energy working out, but then they rest 8 hours, 10 hours a night. They eat very, very carefully, very specific diets, because they need their body to be as strong as possible. And certainly they recognize that if they don't have a good night's sleep, they're going to be tired, cranky, and they won't be able to produce what they had before. You see, if I am tired, I am not going to be a good fighter. If I'm weak, I'm not going to be able to put up a good fight. And I believe that this principle is something that applies in a very, very real way. There was a rule for many years in Alcoholics Anonymous that you can only change one thing at a time. Meaning to say, if you want to give up drinking, and it's a major thing, you're only going to have the willpower, the strength, the energy to give up one thing. So you better be ready that other things are going to start laxing. That means to say, if you're going to give up drinking, you might well put on weight. If you're going to give up drinking, you might end up going back to smoking cigarettes. If you're going to give up alcohol, you might probably have to drink more caffeine. Because you don't have enough energy to fight on two fronts. Halavai, you could fight on one front. Now, the different sheet is, they say maybe two things you could work on. But there's no question that when you put all your energy into one area, other areas are going to fall to the wayside, because a human being can only put out so much energy, so much effort. Now, that's fine if you're a regular person in Alcoholics Anonymous, but as a Ben Torah, we can't do that. Because at Ben Torah, we have to grow in many areas, not just many areas, every area of our life we have to improve in. Midos, my anger, my jealousy, my competitiveness, my humility, my learning, my dominating, what kind of spouse I am, what kind of parent I am. I have to be working on many, many areas. Now, obviously, I have to be smart about it, and I can only focus on one area at a time, but this is the point. And when I focus on that area, I'm using a lot of energy there. Likely, I'm not going to have a lot of energy to work on other areas, so I have to focus 1 month on this area, next month in that area. You move around depending on the needs, depending on the circumstances, depending on the situation you're in, but you're always keeping the others somewhat kind of in the back, your eye on them, but you're focusing on this area. But you see, it requires a lot of willpower, a lot of strength, a lot of energy to work on any one area. Working on two at the same time is debatable, three for sure not, and that's assuming that you're healthy and well. But here's the problem. What happens if life is beating you up? What happens if your situation is so rough that you're just beat up by it? What happens if the people you're around are constantly harassing you and badgering you and bothering you? What happens if the situations that you're in are constantly afflicting you and constantly tormenting you? Well, guess what? You're not going to have any energy to fight. You see, if you have to work on your anger, or your jealousy, or your competitiveness, or certainly taiva, it requires a tremendous amount of energy. It requires real strength. But if you're constantly being beat up by life, if you're constantly just having to just, oh, another terrible, horrible situation I have to live through, you will not have any energy left to fight the fight that you have to. And this is a tremendous yesod. If you're not emotionally wholesome, well, and healthy, you will not have the energy to fight. And many people destroy their simchas achayim, they destroy their entire happiness by allowing situations to control them. Traffic again, oh, it burns me up. And he crossed, oh my goodness, again that guy cut me off. He cut me off, he cut me off again. Oh. And you can see the steam coming out of the guy's ears. Now, if you fight traffic for an hour, and that's the operative word, fight traffic for an hour, and come to work, you're exhausted. Oh, physically, I don't know how, maybe you're not so tired, but emotionally, you're worn out. And if you're constantly being bombarded by people and situations and things that are going wrong all day, every day, well, guess what? By the time the fight comes around, you're wiped out. You don't have the energy to fight. And if you spend all your energy fighting the demons in your head, you have no energy left to fight the fights of life. And many, many people spend inordinate amounts of energy fighting demons. But these demons are self-imposed. You see, when someone cuts me off in traffic, I have a choice to make. I can get angry, really angry, furious, road rage angry. Or I could recognize that this is just one of those things that happen. But it's my choice. And the difference of which way I choose will not just affect my anger, obviously. it will affect me in a much bigger way. My entire day, whether I'm spending that energy being angry and suffering the difficult situation I'm in or not, is going to make a huge difference when I come later in the day to the fights that I really have to fight. And all of the emotions of a person, if you let them control you, will not just hamper your ability to win this fight, may totally eliminate it. Because if you're down and depressed, you're not going to have the strength to fight. Oh, dread another situation. Oh, life is so hard. It's so tough. I'm suffering so. Well, if you're suffering so, you will not have the energy to fight. And if you're anxious or nervous or going through various emotional states of unrest, you are going to be sapping the energy right out of yourself. And typically, the response is, well, what could I do? I don't choose to get angry. The guy cut me off. I don't choose to be nervous. I just am. I can't control these things. This is just my nature. And if you accept that, then you're denying the Torah's understanding. You're denying many mitzvahs in the Torah. And you're living a life of great discomfort. And you're torturing yourself. Because we human beings have tremendous amounts of choice. We have tremendous amount of bechira. And there is a shmuz, the anger management, shmuz number 30, that's worth listening to. The point I want to focus on is just one small point. When someone says that line, and it's a deep cutting line, there's a momentary pause. He said the line, and then you have a choice. Your choice is, do you react? He said that line. I can't believe it. Oh, and you start ranting and raving and going off the deep end. Or do you not? But a reaction it is. You see, he said a line to you, and then your brain processes it. Who is it? What situation? What condition? And why? And I'll give you a good example of what I mean. Most women, within a year or two after they're married, go through approximately the following situation. They're walking with their husband, and all of a sudden a guy from across the street calls out, hey, ugly, you, yeah, you. And the wife watches as her husband turns around, walks across the street with a belligerent walk, walks right up to the guy and says, hey, buddy, how you doing? And they hug and they kiss. Why? Because, hey, ugly is kind of guy talk for, how you doing, buddy? Haven't seen you in a long time. Oh, yeah, how you doing? How you doing? Now, let's focus on that for a minute. When you're walking down the street and someone calls out, hey, ugly, you first do an awful lot of computing. Where am I? Who said it? What's the context? What's the meaning? If it turns out that it's an old buddy of yours from high school, you kind of smile and walk, hey, how you doing? And you're real happy to see him. If it turns out that it's someone else in a different situation, you process the information and come up with a different conclusion. And your emotions are reactions to your conclusions. But you see, it's actual steps. Hearing the information, processing it, and then deciding how to react. I guarantee if the guy was 6'4" and carrying a huge stick and calling you all kinds of nasty names, your reaction would be a lot more guarded than if you thought you could easily take care of this guy and he was just a punk or whatever it might be. Meaning to say, our reactions are much in our control. And one of the things that we have to have, if we want to ever win this game, is we have to take control of our emotional state, take control of what's going on in our lives. And many, many people I know sabotage their success. It's not that they're not motivated. They're super motivated. Not that they don't have willpower. They may have very good willpower, but it's this third leg, the emotional dysregulation. They can't keep a normal, healthy sense of happiness, of joy in their life. And because of that, they're suffering. And because of that suffering, guess what? They're wide open for disaster. If you're nervous, if you're tense all day long, by the time you get home at night, you're weak. You may not be weak physically, but emotionally, you're wiped out. You spent the whole day with nervousness and oh my goodness, I can't pay the mortgage and my kids and this, you're completely undone. And no kidding, you're not going to have the strength to fight the fight. And no kidding, you're going to lose. And these are the three areas that a person must work on. After you have a clear plan, after you spend a lot of time understanding the human After you understand exactly how we work and you understand the balances and everything involved, you have to know that the only way you can implement the plan successfully is if you work on the three separate areas: motivation, willpower, and emotional regulation, controlling your emotions. Because if you're emotionally out of control, there's nothing that's going to prevent you from falling, and nothing that's going to prevent you from becoming unglued. And what's going to happen is you just will never have the energy to fight. Let me share with you an example of the opposite, of someone controlling a situation and not allowing it to get them bent out of shape, and quite the opposite. Here's the story. A young man was going out with a girl, and he liked her a lot, and they were gone out for a while, and from his perspective, it was going very well, and he was very, very interested in her, and after a good number of dates, she said no. She dropped him. He was very hurt, devastated. He was down. But listen, you know, things go on, and he, you know, picked himself up and continued life, etc. A couple of months later, someone comes over to him. He's really not over this girl yet. Someone comes over to him. Listen, you know, I have a mitzvah. I want to approach you. You know, there's a hachnasas kala, a young woman who's engaged, and she doesn't have enough money to the wedding, and I'm collecting money for the chasana. Can you help me out? Guy said, sure. How much do you need? And by the way, who is it? And the person who was collecting told him the name of the kala. It was the girl he had been going out with, the girl that he liked, the girl that dumped him, and the girl that kind of hit him between the eyes. What was his reaction? Would you like to know what his reaction was? His reaction was, absolutely, I'm going to do whatever I can. In fact, I want to help you. I'm going to take over. And without her knowing it, he single-handedly raised $30,000 for her wedding. Now, he had a choice at that moment. When a guy comes over to you and says, you know, the girl that you were going out with, the girl you wanted, is engaged to someone. You want me to help? Not bad enough she dumps me. You want me to help her get married to the other guy? And he could have gotten down and depressed and angry and all types of emotional dysfunctioning. But instead of doing that, he turned it around and accomplished a tremendous thing. He raised a fortune of money to pay for this young woman's chasana. By doing that, he changed himself. He was misgaber. He vanquished his own nature and became stronger. And more than that, you know what he did? He now gave himself the energy and the emotional fortitude to win major, major victories. You see, when you do something major, like Kovish or Yetzer, control yourself and raise a fortune of money for someone else, you feel like a champion. When you do a tremendous chesed for someone else, you feel good, you feel strong, and you're now ready and able to do far more. And instead of having this destroy him, quite the opposite, it became a building block for his success. And this is but one example of situations that happen to us all the time. And learning how to deal with them and learning how to properly interpret and properly maneuver them so that they don't destroy us is one of the keys to success in life. Now, obviously, we work on amidos directly, and we work on becoming more worked out. But what I'm sharing with you here is that specifically when you're working on battling a fight, you can't afford to be weak. And any emotional dysregulation, anytime you're down, depressed, angry, jealous, competitive, or whatever, you're wasting huge, huge amounts of emotional energy. If you have an insecurity complex, and you feel that the whole world doesn't treat you with the cover due to you, and this one dishonors me, and this one disses me, and I'm never given the cover due, and why don't they understand how smart I am, and how great I am, and how chashav I am? You have a problem. And that problem has two separate manifestations. Number one, you have to deal directly with that problem. But number two, do you understand the damage that you're doing to your emotional well-being? All day long, you're constantly being dissed, constantly being put down, and as a result, you'll never have the energy that you need to fight the fight. And you'll lose battle after battle, and you won't understand. I'm so motivated. I learned all the muscles for him. And I have good, strong willpower. I know that. I understand myself. Why do I keep falling down? Why do I keep losing? The answer is because you beat yourself up. The answer is because you lose all of that energy when you squander it all day long fighting fights that you shouldn't be fighting. And many times, it's not as malicious as that. Let's say a person does have a poor self-esteem and they feel about themselves inadequate. They don't feel good and they're always questioning themselves and always doubting themselves and always putting themselves down and always feeling bad. Well, guess what? That itself is a huge liability. Because if you feel down about yourself and you feel you won't succeed and you're constantly bombarding yourself with all that negative talk, well, guess what? You will not have the energy to succeed. And you have to work on that. You have to work on that because it's an issue in and of itself, and you have to work on it because it will affect everything else that you do. The point is, this issue called working on taiva cannot be dealt with only in isolation as if it's one issue and one issue only. Most people have many other issues that compound it, or at least one major other issue that makes it much harder to deal with. And you can't only work on taiva. You have to work on that, the comorbidity, the other factor that's causing you the trouble, because working on taiva alone won't work if you're constantly sapping your energy, losing your strength, because you're constantly suffering. And most people have the demons in their head, some bigger, some smaller, but these demons seep in and they sap your energy. You fight those fights and you have nothing left to fight the real battles. And one of the things that a person has to work on a constant, regular basis is bitachon, trusting in Hashem. You see, no matter what, if you don't have good, strong, solid trust in Hashem, you're going to suffer an awful lot during the day. It's when the deal doesn't work out. I worked on this deal for weeks and months and it was perfect and it was going to make me a fortune of money and it falls apart. And I'm down and depressed. Obviously, it troubles me. It bothers me. And obviously, it's going to be a lot more difficult for me to fight the fight. And a person has to spend an awful lot of time understanding that Hashem knows better than I what's for my best. That Hashem has my best interests at heart. That Hashem loves me more than I love me. But this is not the platform for working on bitachon. You listen to the Bitachon Workshop, you go on the shmooz.com, there are many shmoozim specifically on Bitachon. Bitachon Workshop is 24 shurim specifically on Bitachon, and you work on it. Because if you have any of the normal human tendencies and you don't start working on them, you'll never succeed in winning this battle of taiva, because you're going to be nervous and anxious, troubled and worried, and guess what? You're not going to have the fight, you're not going to have the energy, and you're going to lose the battle. And so, therefore, the person has to be very, very wise to himself. You have to know which is your poison, which is your danger, and you have to work on that specifically, because it's going to sap your energy, it's going to take away the fight, and it's going to cause you to lose. What Yaakov Avinu points out to us is exactly that point. He was a champion of champion, a gibor chayil, but he was also wise. And he was very wise to his nature, very wise to the ways of people, and he was afraid. And therefore he davened Hashem, Hashem, please help me. Because he recognized Lavan was a potential danger, even though to us it sounds so foreign. The difference is that Yaakov had the wisdom to understand himself and to plan ahead of time. And emotional regulation and recognizing the danger that it puts me in is a huge, huge part of succeeding. But there's another part that I want to focus on, and it's also very, very significant. When I drive with my kids, I like to point out different things to them that we pass, that we see. One time we were driving back from, I believe it was from Rochester. I was a Rebbe Yeshiva there, and we were in the van, and all the kids are in there. And I'm driving on the interstate over there, and I have the speedometer set, and I'm driving, and all of a sudden, on the side of the road, I see a big deer, huge deer. And I'm about to call out to the kids, hey, look, when I see the deer looks at me, sees me, then kind of crouches back, and then all of a sudden jumps right in front of the van. Splattered deer all over the highway. And Baruch Hashem didn't stop the van, we kept on. But what kept playing over and over in my brain are the words, dumb deer. Dumb deer, why did you do that? He saw me. He saw the van coming, kind of scooted back to make sure he had a good spring, and then jumped out right in front of the van and got hit right there. If he didn't jump out, he wouldn't have gotten hit. If he would have waited, he wouldn't have gotten hit. But it looked like he timed it. It looked like he waited just for the moment to jump in front of the van so he could get hit. And it took me a little while to understand why the deer did that. And I believe the reason why the deer did that was because the deer was reacting to things that exist in his world. You see, in the world of a deer, things move at a certain pace. A man who runs very, very fast might run 15 miles an hour. A faster animal might run 25 miles an hour. The deer might be so fast that it actually runs 35 miles an hour, but that's the top speed of anything in the deer's world. Well, my van was clocking at 72 miles an hour, and the deer saw it. It clocked and timed it perfectly according to anything in its world. According to anything in its world, it had plenty of time to get across the road and not be anywhere near that big object coming at it. But the only thing that it forgot was that it wasn't dealing with things in its world. There were other things besides what live in its world, and that dumb deer ended up splattered across the highway. Now again, Hashem gives different strength to different animals, and it's probably beyond the deer's ability to recognize that there are things that move well outside of its speed and things outside of its abilities, and that's okay for a deer, but it's not okay for a human. And there are many, many times when we humans do things that are almost as dumb as that deer. And I'll explain to you what I mean. I was once speaking to a drug counselor, and he told me that he will not allow any of his patients to travel to Manhattan. And I was curious, why? And he said, what do you mean, why? The Empire State Building. Now, I didn't know that much about drug use and drug abuse, but the Empire State Building didn't sound like a red light district or drug abuse. I didn't understand what was the issue. So I said, what do you mean? Said, what do I mean? You ever see the needle on top, you know, the antenna? All of my guys see that as a hypodermic needle, and it's a trigger. And the minute they see it, in their mind, it flashes hypodermic needle, and it's a trigger that causes them to go back to using drugs. Now, you have to be a drug addict to see the Empire State Building antenna as a trigger, but that's an important yesod. Each of us have triggers. There are different things that cause us to be more likely to get into trouble. And you have to become wise to those triggers. Unlike the deer who can just run in front of cars and just, it's all he has in terms of intelligence, we have to become very wise to what works, very wise to what doesn't work, and we have to become very attuned to what our triggers are. What are the things that cause you to get into trouble? What are the things that cause you to fail? What precipitated this? Many times it's strictly emotional. Sometimes it's a particular image or a particular look or a particular young woman or a particular situation. And the only way you're going to win this war in a big way is if you become wise to yourself. You become wise to your emotions, become wise to your weakness, and find the triggers. What are the problems? Where did I fail? Why did I fail? What are my weaknesses? What are the areas that I have to strengthen? And one of the tricks to doing this, and probably the only way to really do it well, is to write it down. When it comes to dining, one of the big rules to succeed in dining is write it down. And they say write down everything, your breakfast, your lunch, your snacks, everything. And what you'll find invariably is that if you write down what you eat, you lose more weight. Why? Because you start realizing, oh, it wasn't quite 3,200 calories. It was more like 3,800 calories. Oh, and it wasn't just one or two snacks. It was actually five in that weekend. And before you know it, you become much more attuned, much more aware. And if you would like to succeed in this fight, one of the things you have to do is you have to keep a log. You have to keep a regular log about your successes and your failures. Which street caused you to have all kinds of problems? What situation caused you to be in a state of turmoil? When did you fail? When did you succeed? And what caused it? And you have to be very, very aware of your triggers. Was it a magazine? Was it a billboard? Was it a woman? Was it whatever? And you have to become attuned, because you can't fight this fight dumb. You can't fight this fight with your eyes closed. If you fight this fight with your eyes closed, you will end up like that deer, just getting hit and not even knowing why or when or how or what. And the only way you can win this is by keeping a log and finding out what caused it. what was the week? Well, I don't know, whatever. I was just in a different mood. I don't know why. It just happened. And it happened again. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen. And you're right. It will happen again and again and again and again until you discover, where did I go wrong? I started growing. I started accomplishing. I was working on my overall ruchnius. I was also working directly on taiva. I was lessening it. And all of a sudden, I crashed. What happened? And trace it. It might have been strictly that you're beating yourself up because you don't get enough money or honor position, or it might have been because you're angry or depressed, or it might have been because it was a particularly unusual situation, or a particularly young woman, or whatever it might have been. And when you write that down, you begin to get an understanding. You begin to understand yourself differently, and you begin to relate to yourself differently, and you begin to become wise. This is a fight that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. We're able to win, and Hashem gave us all of the tools, but it's a fight that requires tremendous wisdom. Tremendous wisdom. When the Mesillas Shasharim describes how you beat the Satan, he doesn't say if you're a Gibor Chayil. He doesn't say if you're a warrior, if you're a fighter. He says, Yefshel Limalik Mimeno, it's impossible to save from him, except with a very wide, broad view, the chokhmah and wisdom. It's impossible to be saved from the satan unless you have a very broad understanding of life, unless you understand the human, unless you study yourself, unless you see your strengths and your weaknesses, unless you understand how taiva works and how the whole package fits in. And once you understand it and you understand yourself, then you use wisdom, you use intelligence. And then you do what Yaakov Avinu did. You daven to Hashem. Because I guarantee Yaakov Avinu was way, way more competent than we are. He was far more emotionally regulated, far, far more willpower, and far more motivated. He was a tzaddik, a man of unimaginable greatness. But he recognized the danger, and he recognized that I can't go it alone. And he asked Hashem for help. And one of the things that you should be doing on a regular, ongoing basis is asking Hashem for help. Hashem, I didn't choose this generation. I didn't choose these desires. I didn't choose to be in this matzav. Could I have done better? Maybe. I don't know. But Hashem, help me get out. Please, help me win. Help me continue. Help me understand what my weaknesses and what my strengths are, and help me win the battle. But the only way you have a right to that tefillah, and the only way you have a right to expect Hashem to answer that request, is if you're doing your part. And your part primarily is to become wise to yourself and fight the fight to the best of your abilities. But it's got to be both. You have to be a fighter. You have to know that you're going to get knocked down and have to get back in that ring. You have to know that, like a Muhammad Ali, you're going to get hit a million times in the head. And the champions are not the best, cleanest fighters in the world. The champions are the guys who know how to get back up off that canvas and get back in the fight time after time after time. But you also have to be very, very wise. You have to be a fighter, but you have to be very wise to your nature, very wise to situations, and you have to be strategic. If you have the opportunity to gain a support group around you, that's also a huge tool for victory. One of the reasons why there are approximately a million AA type of organizations in the world, almost a million different groups that meet, whether it be Gamblers Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, there are all of these support groups. And you know why? Because they work. We human beings are greatly influenced by fellowships, by friends, by support groups. And if you can join an AA group, or in this case for this particular issue, you should do it. That greatly, greatly helps. And it's a huge siyuah, a huge benefit. If you can't join such a group, having a chabura that works together on it, or at least maybe an older friend, maybe a Rebbe, who you confide in, who can guide you, who can help you. And a lot of times it's not even the advice. It's just knowing that someone's with you, someone's together, someone's supporting you. It's a huge, huge difference. There's a Weight Watchers finding that's interesting to note. They say the people who attend meetings on average lose 3 times as much weight as people who don't attend meetings. Now, isn't that strange? Same diet, same people. But if you attend meetings and you're there, there's support, there's constant involvement, there's more of a whole society and community that helps you. And again, if you could have support groups, Ashrecha, you should do it and should try. But ultimately, you have to understand where the fight is fought, where the battles are battled, and you have to spend an awful lot of effort and energy being wise to yourself, understanding your strengths and weaknesses, understanding that you have to regulate your emotionality. You can't allow yourself the luxury of getting angry or jealous or depressed or anything else that's going to seep away your strength to fight. And I'd like to finish with one last point. The Yalkut Shimoni in Rus, in Perek Aleph, Tofresh Aleph, brings down a fascinating Maisa. Maisa b'chosid echad. He was a chosid. This man is called a chosid because he was a great and righteous man. When the Moroim Otanoim call a man a chosid, it means he was an extraordinarily pious individual. In any case, he accepted on himself not to accept anything from anyone. Many times Chassidim have the attitude Hashem provides, and they won't accept tzedakah even if they're roi. But in any case, he was very, very poor. He only had one suit of clothing. He had one blanket. And each night he would cry out in pain because he literally didn't have food to eat and didn't have clothing. He was living in almost a garbage dump, and his clothing were becoming worn out upon him. One time, Eliyahu Navi came to him in the image of an Arab, and he stood next to this chassid and said, "Would you like to borrow 2 coins, and then you'll use this coin to earn a living?" The man said, "Fine." The man took these 2 coins, and he went and he bought some merchandise. He sold that merchandise. He bought some more merchandise, sold it, bought, sold, bought, sold. After a year, he was wealthy. And when he became wealthy, he forgot all of his humility, all of his righteousness, all of the amount of time he spent in davening. And he became a very successful businessman, but no longer what he used to be. Kadosh Baruch Hu calls Eliyahu and said, "Eliyahu, I had one chassid in the world, and you ruined it for me. Go back down and undo what you've done." Eliyahu said, "I'm the one who gave him the 2 ksafim. I'm going to find him, and I'm going to ask him back." And that's what he did. Eliyahu went back, appeared as the Arab again to this man, and said, "Could I now borrow back? Can I back the 2 coins that I loaned you?" The man said, "Surely." He gave him back, and it wasn't very long until all of his wealth left him, and he was back in the garbage dump, back wearing the worn-out clothing, sitting and crying. And now Eliyahu came another time, and he comes to him and says, "For my friend, isn't it terrible the situation you're in? Wouldn't you want me to help you?" Says Eliyahu to this man, "If you swear to me that you'll remain the chassid that you were, if you promise me that you'll remain righteous and pious, I'll give you the 2 coins again and you could have great wealth." The man swore, accepted the 2 coins, went back to the marketplace and regained his wealth. Now here's the question. Eliyahu HaNavi recognizes that this man failed. He's a chassid, a great, pious, and holy man. But obviously, the nesayin of wealth was too great for him. Obviously, the nesayin of being a rich man was too much for him. So why in the world would you assume that the second time would be any different? If he failed the nesayin the first time, that means despite the fact that he's a chassid, despite the fact that he's a great human being, he can't withstand that nesayin. Why do you assume that the second time is any different? And how is it possible that the second time he did win? And I believe the answer to this is that it's ein adoma. There's no comparison when you know the nesayin's coming to whether you don't know. You see, if you're caught off guard and you're caught unawares, who knows, before you even aware of what's happening, you're deep, deep down a road and you're doing things you never dreamt of, never thought of, and it's too late. But if you're aware of the nesayin beforehand, if you're aware of the danger, you guard yourself and you don't let yourself slip. Not the first step, not the first inch. You hold back. And if you didn't start a behavior yet, if you didn't get into trouble yet, it's much easier to resist. And that's in fact what happened with this man. Yes, he failed in a sign, but he failed it because he didn't know. He wasn't aware. Eliyahu HaNavi made him aware of the danger. The man took a shua, and then he was able to withstand it because he knew what was coming, prepared himself, and walked into battle ready. And I believe that this is a tremendous yesod. You have to prepare yourself for battle. You have to know your weaknesses. And when you know you're going away for a weekend and there'll be this situation or that situation, or you're going to be in a matzav that will cause you trouble, you have your log, you know your nature, and you know what your triggers are, and you know what's coming up. And you prepare yourself and you talk to yourself. Before you go into battle, you ready yourself. You psych yourself up and you imagine winning. You visualize success. You visualize not caving in. And when you come into a battle ready, it's very different. You're not going to win every fight. You're not going to master your nature in a heartbeat. But it's a very different battle. It's a very different fight. And keep in mind that every fight that you fight, you get reward for. Every fight that you fight strengthens your willpower. Every fight that you fight weakens the nefesh HaBahami, even if you cave. Even if you cave, your willpower became stronger. The reward that you get for it is regardless of whether you caved in the end, and you've changed. But the wisdom to recognize what your weaknesses are and to understand that I have to prepare myself for the battle. There will be many situations where I'll be tempted. It might be a particular time of the year. It might be in a particular situation. It might be when you lost a business deal, or it might be when you didn't get a good chavrusa. It might be whenever. But know your weaknesses, and then when you know that you're walking into one of these nisyonos, prepare yourself. Obviously, you can't prepare for every battle because you don't know some that are coming. But the ones that you do know, you sure do prepare yourself. You find your triggers, you find your weaknesses, and you work. And I believe this is so that Yaakov Avinu is teaching us is you have to be wise. You have to recognize which emotionalities are damaging you. You have to recognize which is sapping away your energy. You have to find what are your trigger points. You have to plan it out, and you daven. When you understand yourself and you stand in front of Hashem and you say, I've done all I can. I'm fighting the fight. I'm working on it. I'm keeping a log. I'm understanding my nature better and better. I'm finding my triggers. Please, Hashem, help me. That's a tefillah that's powerful. That's a tefillah that Hashem accepts. And it's a tefillah that can change the future. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant you the wisdom, the ability, give us all the ability to put this into practice.